Hello, welcome to True Hoop with me, Gerard Hector, and Coach David Thorpe. How are you, sir?
I am well. How are you?
Good. David, how would you say you've enjoyed the first, 4 or 5 days of the playoffs?
I'm just a terrible person for that because it's my business. So right. let me take off my hat. From a fan, I'm not good at being a fan. I think there's been some really compelling games. There's been a few amazing performances. Mm-hmm. And I've been a little disappointed in a few teams as well. But generally speaking, I like the product that I'm seeing. How about you?
Yeah. You know, I have as well. I think to your point, we've seen some compelling games. We've seen some interesting, sort of storylines start to take shape, right? And that's really what happens in each of these playoff series, right? It's like people come in with sort of preconceived notions or narratives based on what happened in the regular season, who's the best player in the series, who's whatever. And then, the actual games get played and then things may support that or they may not. But so far, I really enjoyed it. And, one of the narratives, David, in a story that, kind of started, I guess, last year, but really has been like the identity of the Heat, right? And like hashtag Heat culture. Is this idea of, well, here's a team that no matter what the situation is, missing guys, whatever, it does an 8-seed play. None of it matters because Eric Spoelstra and the Heat will find a way to compete and win ball games. And sure enough, David, after getting blown out in game one, they did that last night to even their series against the Celtics. They outscored the Celtics plus 33 from the three-point line. Now, working with David Thorpe as long as I have, David would often say, that's a math problem. You get beat like that from 3 points, I don't care. You're not winning that game. And sure enough, Celtics just didn't.
All right, so going back to what you said about the narratives, and I say this with all due respect. I'm friendly with a lot of people in the media, like mm-hmm. really friendly. We text each other. I'm on their shows. They're on, they will call me for advice, whatever. But they don't know anything about basketball. And so the people who read them and listen to them are following people that don't – those writers are mostly just fans of the game, or those talking heads are mostly just fans of the game. Unfortunately, our players that opine on the games tend to just do silly stuff and talk big picture narratives that don't exist in the real world. That's not to say there aren't some things. I always like to say, if you're living on Earth, you can't not deal with gravity. Unless you're in a really special machine, right? Gravity. Okay, so there are some of those things that exist. But the reality is, these are incredibly complex games where there's hundreds, if not thousands, well, there's definitely thousands of variables that are occurring all the time. And so it's an enormous jigsaw puzzle, and people act as if they can just kind of see what the puzzle ends up looking like and make a decision on something when in almost every case, it's so much more than that. So that's not to say we can't pick and choose some things. They just don't tend to do it. And so as it relates to Miami, what's happening? Well, first of all, the game one, they had just finished their previous game. Mm-hmm. So they had very little time. And dealing with the injuries was the new one, with Jimmy was very new. Mm-hmm. Now that they had an extra – I talked to a Heat player before the game yesterday. He felt really confident. I thought, he might be delusional. He wasn't because there's two things to consider on this particular very specific subject. A, can Spoelstra come up with a game plan that can work? It's Eric Spoelstra. The answer is yes, he can. B, I think equally, if not more importantly, or harder, more of a challenge, I would probably argue it's more of a challenge, is to execute because the other guys want to beat you. Mm-hmm. But they executed. So when I've watched a lot of Miami Heat games this year. There are many times where I prefer just watching my fan go round and round than watching their offense.
They were bad.
And it was just beautiful what they were doing. Everyone's weaponized. Bam and his high arcing jumper, which mm-hmm. isn't new. He's just got more and more confidence in it. They all understand. I don't know how many turnovers they had yesterday. It didn't seem like a lot, but I just didn't look at the box score. I thought they executed really, really well. And then what else had to happen? They had to 14. That's more than I thought it was. Wow. So Boston's also a terrific elite defensive team.
Yep.
Although they didn't always play good defense yesterday. Or they did, they just didn't. Their plan was bad because it seemed like they were giving up shots. But to me, if you want to look at any one thing, it wasn't how many threes. The question wasn't how many threes they made. It was how many they took compared to normal. So I think I'm right to say that during the regular season, they took 33 threes a game. And I think last night they took 40. I could be wrong.
43.
There you go. Yeah, I think they took 33, so 10 more. So when we get to the next playoff series we're going to talk about, where I think another team is facing an uphill battle and is refusing to take more threes, I think Spo realized we cannot out-execute them over 48 minutes with our current roster, with our normal mix of twos and threes. We need to increase our number of threes, try not to have as many turnovers, we have a lot of shots, and hopefully make a bunch. And it seemed like Boston, so Miami made their adjustment. Mm-hmm. They looked for more threes. They took more threes. And Boston seemed like, we've seen the data, go right ahead. Mm-hmm. And it bit them in the ass.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
I don't care. We you and I have been covering this league a long time. There's been more than one recent champion whose biggest challenge was in round one. So if this becomes their biggest challenge, great. Like, they'll get better from it. They're better off beating Miami in five or six than four. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt in my mind. The rest they'll get from the extra day or two, which they already have almost a two-week rest anyway, is less beneficial to them than having to raise their intensity.
Yep.
So I thought absolute chef's kiss to the Heat for reminding us it's a coach's league. But players also have to respond.
Yes.
Jaime Jaquez, Tyler
Hero.
Wow,
David.
Bam. Highsmith. This is Miami culture. It's just a made-up word, culture, in that respect. They're respectful of each other. They work really hard. Their players perform. That's coaching. That's not management. Management may empower coaching, but that's coaching, Gerard. To see these guys play at that level when many of them, could be a lot of other places that wouldn't be in the game, or they'd be in Poland right now.
Yep.
But they're doing well for the Heat. That's great credit to Coach Spoelstra and his staff, to be fair.
100%. Jaquez is a rookie, seemed unfazed by the moment.
Yeah.
Tyler Hero, of course, as you often talk about, not a rookie, but someone who had a bad game one. Who cares? Letting that son of a bitch fly right off the bat in game two. Oh, it went in? Oh, I'm having a great game today. And he sure enough did that. It was your point about execution. They showed Spoelstra from in the post game, talking to his team, and they obviously edit that and they cut out certain parts.
I want to hear, I saw it, but I had my, as is typical, I had my Sade radio on, was just trying to relax with my wife at the end of the night a little bit, but I saw, so please, I was going to look at it later today because I tape it all. Tell me what he said.
He said, way to bring the compete level. And he kept referencing the compete level and compete. And I was thinking, God, this is like David talks about all the time. So much of this, of course, coaching, the strategy, which was excellent. I'll talk about that in 1 second. But they just fought and competed hard. Every single thing you always talk about, whether it's offense or defense, and you're running to set a screen. Well, you're just setting a screen, or are you screening with conviction? Are you doing it with some kind of purpose to be there? To me and to my eye, David, it seemed like everything they did had some kind of purpose to it. And the timing on their doubles, when they were doubling, it wasn't just like a haphazard, let me come over. No. Exactly at this time, when he turns his back by a half split second, now I'm coming. And the rotations on the backside, I was like, this, to your point, this is just beautiful coaching. Beautiful coaching.
Yeah, I really like that, Gerard. I think if there was one word that I use more than any other word in practice and games, if I had to boil it down to one word, it wasn't love. I did use that a lot. But not even close, actually. It was the word, one word, compete. And I had a way of, I'll break the computer. I clap my hands super loud. It'd be like, boom, compete all the time. It's a fight. And these are not machines. These are human beings. And this is where I think some coaches really fail, is to get them, and Spoelstra does not fail. If it'd be great. I have no talent as a videographer, but if I could, I grab coaches' faces and put it to music. You've got the whiny face. You've got the confused face. There's lots of other faces. Spoelstra is always intensity.
Yes.
Oh, and I've talked to players this for many years now. Always intensity. And I don't know why it doesn't work better in the regular season. They need to look at that. It's not fun to always have to come into the play-in. Mm-hmm. And I do not think they're getting out of round one. I don't care what happened in game two. But, boy, it works in the playoffs. And we'll get to some other series, specifically, yeah. Like, for example, Indiana-Milwaukee, where the Bucks just did not have that kind of intensity. And they let Indiana have the best offensive game so far of the playoffs. At least I didn't check to see if OKC beat it last night. They might have.
Well, last night.
It really matters. Miami, but this is what you expect. So this is where the media does get it right sometimes. They just don't really understand always why. But you got it. It is that level of competitive fire and commitment to the strategy and the plan, the game plan, the blueprint, and then doing it, playing well. You know, late in the game, I thought the game was over anyway. But Tyler Herro had a strong right hand drive, like a looping right hand hook off the board. That's a hard shot to make, and he made it. Of course, he made it. Miami was rolling, but you still got to make it. Like, it doesn't matter if you get the shot off. I hope that's not the best they can play. It'd be fun to see a 2-2 series going. I don't think Boston's losing both games in Miami. They could lose one. They are human beings.
For sure.
And they're playing a juggernaut in terms of coaching. Mm-hmm. And Mazzulla's got his hands full.
Yeah, so you brought it up. So let's talk about his counterpart, Injo Mazzulla. David, I was perplexed. You'd mentioned at the start, maybe it was their game plan. They're like, the numbers say, the data says, you guys don't shoot threes well, so we're going to let you. David, there were some lazy closeouts. There were some non-existent whatever, just shoot the three. I would feel like at some point, well, if they keep making them, well, now it's on us to be like, well, I have to change now, right? Like, and that's on coaching. If my data says let them shoot from three because they're not good at it, okay. And we liked it and we support that. But if they're on a heater and we are now losing the game, this is not a random regular season game where who gives a shit, like whatever. No, we don't want to be down 1-1. We don't want to be tied. We want to go back to Miami 2-0. Why not change and say, all right, we need to come out and close to these shooters instead of what we're doing?
First of all, Miami is a good shooting team. I think they finished 10th or 11th this year in three-point shooting for this season. I don't remember how they finished since March 1st, which is normally when I look at my data. I just don't remember. My memory is that they were fine, maybe not great, but for the season, they were good. Mm-hmm. And they certainly were stroking it last night. So part of me wondered, is it a machismo thing? Like, yeah, they can't keep making this, because that does go through players' minds. Or also, I just thought Miami had Boston on a string. And they just next pass, next play. And Boston just couldn't kind of muster up their processing power. They needed a higher RAM computer for last night anyway. Mm-hmm. And I mean, they fought hard. They made some big shots late, but just – It was an avalanche from Miami's side. Yeah. And again, it might be the best Miami can play. And they may lose three straight. It's certainly possible. Yeah. Boston's a terrific team. But it is a reminder to every owner and every general manager, the advantage you have in a truly special game strategist and a manager and motivator of men. And we shouldn't, you know, Pat Riley also had both. Great
most
strategist,
doing that. Mm-hmm.
Great motivator of men. You can. I didn't love all of his tactics upon reading Chris Herring's book on. I think it's Herring's book
Blood,
on
Blood on the Floor and the Garden.
Yeah, amazing book. I thought it was fantastic. I don't care about the Knicks at all, but I really enjoyed reading that book. So I don't love not letting the wives go to Houston. That was pretty stupid. Cost them a championship, maybe. But Spo is cut from that cloth. And I saw they showed Pat Riley late in the game. Mm-hmm. I did not have the volume on, but I could read his lips. Yeah. Someone makes a big shot. There's maybe 2 minutes to go in the game. It's probably 95% Miami way, whatever, likely to win. And they show Pat Riley and his wife, and she's cheering. And I saw him say, like, let's get some stops. Like, this is how a coach feels. Like, congratulations. It doesn't matter.
Right,
what are we doing?
Defense.
Yeah. And as I sell, like, I've got a bunch of guys in the playoffs. I'm talking to a young guy today. It doesn't matter that you've won games, but it doesn't matter. In the regular season, it does. You're playing for a seed. But in the playoffs, you have to think of it as, until we get to four, we have zero. Like, nothing has been accomplished until we get to four. It doesn't matter. And That's really next play mentality, and that's what the postseason has to be. And the Heat almost like it.
They do.
When they're down 1-0. They just get comfortable in the mud, man.
Yeah, that comfortable is exactly the phrase I was going to use. You know, there's a phrase that coaches often use in sports like swimming, which I was a coach in, an athlete in running, whatever. And it's this idea of, and it's similar in basketball, I'd imagine, is you have to be comfortable with being uncomfortable, right? That is something that we train you on, like when you're training your anaerobic system and your aerobic system, right? Like being comfortable. And that's where Miami seems to love it. Like, oh, down 0-1. Yeah, this is great. Like, we got to figure out, we got to problem solve. We love it here. Let's grind it out. Like, and you know, that's a skill, right? To be able to get your guys to like that environment.
When I don't know if I've told you this story before, I probably haven't, but when my son was like 11 years old, 10 years old, he was playing all-star baseball. He was great. And they kind of made me the GM of the team. All that meant was I'm the only guy as a dad allowed to be on the field with the coaches because Max and I just had a great relationship that way. We had plenty of spats over the years, but never about stuff like that in baseball. And I don't know, baseball, like we had two coaches that played professional baseball. They knew much more than me. But the one thing I said that our manager who played college football kept repeating is he's like, Coach Thorpe always says, bad things are going to happen. In baseball, bad things are going to happen. And it's good. You're going to have a drop, pop, fly out of nowhere, and you're going to get picked off of first base or whatever. Like, you're going to have a terrible call through strike, whatever. Like, you just – and so most of these guys, honestly, have been through that because it happens in every sport. Right. Someone banks in a three. You pick up a third foul early on. Like, just bad things happen in sports, like in life. Mm-hmm. And it does affect players. It absolutely does. I told a player recently, he missed some free throws in a game, and he smiled. And he missed way more free throws than he would normally miss. I saw him smile after the last miss, and I said to him, I'm so proud of you for that. The worst thing you can do is let that affect your emotional IQ.
Right.
Like, it happens. Shit happens, man. And he had a great game. You missed some free throws. Move on, you know?
Yep.
Yeah. Miami's just, they're the picture of that, right?
They're good at that. Last thing I'll say for Boston, you know, one of the big things for them that we liked in their offseason that we give Brad kudos for, I think you might have even had him as your executive of the year, was the pickup of Porzingis as a great X factor. And I thought Spo's plan on him, their physicality, and not just quote unquote, all right, we've got to be more physical. No, it's how they were physical with him specifically, right? On the catch, right? And bothering him at certain parts with certain types of players. And it sort of rendered him not effective in that game last night. And I think, you know, that's just something that Boston, I'm sure Coach Mazzulla is going to look at and be like, all right, how do we, you know, continue to do what we do and get him in more advantageous positions?
Yeah, he's got to have a disposition for it. You know, this is, you know, the playoffs are a new thing for him. And relatively anyway, it's been a bit. And there's an edge that you need. But honestly, you know, I was watching Drew and Derek. I thought Jalen had a pretty good edge. Tatum was okay. But they didn't come for the rock fight that they were in. And again, this is human nature. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they definitely took care of business in game one after what happened last year in Miami. I think I've said, though, Miami, like the Knicks wanted Philly. Miami was fine with Boston.
Yeah, might be fine with whoever they got. They're like, we don't give a shit. We'll take anybody on.
It's a mentality that you really – I just love that. I really do love that, adopting that mentality. And Boston's got a – they could easily lose game three.
That's play some pressure
well
now.
Mm-hmm. And play well and lose game three. These things happen.
For sure.
But I think we'll see a much better edge about them. Yeah.
And to your point, this is good for them, right? They hadn't played any meaningful basketball in quite some time, right? Any close games. And so this is all part of the process. If you want to become a champion, it's not just the fire you're forged in the seasons prior. It's the fire that you're still forging through in the current season you're trying to win the championship in. So this is all part of the process for them. All right. You mentioned the Heat doing a great job taking more threes than they did all regular season. And they won that math game in game two. A team that we talked about, that if they want to upset the defending champion Nuggets, needs to do that as the Los Angeles Lakers. They, however, did not. Nuggets.
They took less threes than normally they do.
Yeah, less threes than normal. Nuggets took a 2-0 lead. We talked about the beginning, great games. And David, just from a compelling drama standpoint, that game two was so exciting. Like, just everything that Lakers up huge, 20. And we're like, man, Nuggets are just like in, I don't know, neutral, not really doing a whole lot. All of a sudden, all right, as the Nuggets do, when we have to do what we do, let's go to our Murray Jokic game. Bam, pick and roll, all the different. Okay, slowly chipping away. Lakers helping that too, not being as good on offense. Nuggets also ratcheted up their defense. And then that last sequence from the Porter Jr. made threes to the LeBron missed. I was like, oh, what is happening right now? And the Murray game winner. I was like, I mean, David, it's easy to say in hindsight, but and I'm sure a lot of people did. I just knew it. I was like, oh, that's going in 100%. I was like, this is Murray mid-range in the corner, 100% going in. And it did. It was a fun game.
Before Jokic turned into, you know, the best player in the world for a bit, and maybe he's there now. It doesn't matter if it looks like he could be. He's playing like it now. There was Jamal Murray being this incredible playoff scorer, just really locked into the zone as a shooter. And those pull-up jumpers against Utah, for example, were incredible. So, yeah, same thing. But my takeaway in the game, I have a few, but one of them was, boy, it's nice when you have the world's best player on your team or just the best player on the court. When they have AD and LeBron, we still have the best player. And the way Shea's playing, like he's right there.
Yeah.
For the best player in the world. But it doesn't matter. On this court, it's just Lakers versus Nuggets. Jokic, I put this in our article yesterday. Jokic, he missed a shot against AD and just banged it against the rim, grabbed it, scored. Like, that's just what the best players do.
He's so good at that, man. So good. You write about it all the time. The missed shot, go up and get it. The tip rebound to himself or to a team. Yeah. I'm just like, man. It's what you say, right? It's the snake and the cat, right? When they're doing the thing. It's just processing it way faster. I got it. I know where all the angles are coming from. No problem. And mind you, let me give some kudos right now to Anthony Davis, who played really well.
My goodness, he's amazing. He's just but Jokic's better.
Shit didn't matter. It just didn't matter. Like, down the stretch, Jokic just bullied him on a number. I was like, oh, man. Like, AD, like, remember he had the whole thing about, like, I get no love for DPOY, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, no. And he's an incredible defender. Like, amazing. He's going to sure be top three whenever the awards comes out in the next couple of weeks. But didn't matter. Jokic just, again, he's the best problem solver. Him and LeBron, just elite problem solvers.
It goes to, I think I said this on Monday's show, Cavs versus Spurs, my first year covering the NBA for ESPN. Where I felt the Cavs had a change of what they were doing because they're just not going to execute that Spurs team down the stretch. Not with as young as LeBron was, whatever. And their games were really competitive and they got swept. Like, normally you get in a coin flip game and you feel like, well, maybe I can win too. Obviously, there's no such thing as flipping a coin seven times and it's head tails. You know, it's sometimes you get a streak of four or five.
Right.
But this isn't quite that because in these coin flip games, one of those teams, is just better at executing down the stretch than the other. And I think Denver has that advantage over the Lakers. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think they do. And so to me, you had to change the math a little bit and take about 8 to 12 more threes a game and hope that you shoot well. And Denver's trying to keep them from doing that, but I'm quite sure LA could do it if they wanted to. I know what LA's thinking. We got LeBron, we have AD, we're just going to be macho men and outpower you. And now they're down 0-2 again. Then the 9 straight, whatever it is, in a row,
And David, psyche-wise, talk about these are not machines, right? These are human beings.
Yeah.
And players can always talk about all they want, move on to the next play, whatever it's doing. They did what they had to do. How demoralizing, though, is losing that 20-point lead and losing that kind of game in a series for this team?
Well, they have young guys on their team. One of the benefits of having some young guys is the saying, youth is wasted on the young, is wise. But in this way, it works. So you and I both know they're going to have a tough time winning 4 or 5 against this team. But I don't think they think that. I think LeBron knows. I think AD knows. Like, yeah, we're kind of fucked. Yeah. let's give hope a chance to happen. Let's win game three. Maybe Denver lays an egg in game four. Maybe they lay an egg in game three. And that lose confidence for game four. Like, it's all possible.
Right.
But to win 4 or 5 against that team is just very unlikely. And I just don't think these young guys know. And I've told you the story maybe before. I've been NBA games late in seasons where I always go early to watch these guys warm up. And I'll sit on the court and just watch them with their form, whatever. Whether it's players I know or not, doesn't matter. And I just remember seeing two guys in particular, Cedric Simmons and Hilton Armstrong. I think they both were on the Bulls that year.
I remember Hilton.
And they, to my mind, they had no idea oh, they're out of the league soon. As it turned out, Cedric was, Hilton wasn't. Hilton just ended up being a role player for a long time. Not a long time, but some years. But I could just see on their facial expression, their body language, that they don't realize that they have no urgency to what they're doing in pregame, no urgency in the game, out of the league soon. That's being young. The not being mindful of details, not recognizing, oh, I'm in an existential crisis here. And so I think LeBron gets it, and I think AD gets it, and I think he got it in game two. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't want to be down 2-0 to this team.
Right.
And it's a crushing loss to them. It's not so crushing to the young guys. And there's only a few there. Like, Hachimura's not been in the playoffs a bunch, whatever. And,
right.
But they've all, they all were on the team last year. I don't think Darvin Ham's a great motivator. Not that he's terrible. He's not terrible. I think they know we're up against it. But I think they'll play great in game three.
Yep.
And we'll be devastated if they lose game three, because then it's over.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. You brought up something interesting in your piece, in your playoff observations piece. And folks, if you're not read it, please go ahead and do that. And something that led to the Lakers, besides losing the 20-point lead, but a play when late in the game, an earlier three in the clock that potentially had some negative side effects. You want to run through that for everybody?
I want to be really clear. I'm going to speak to some data people about it and some other coaches. So LeBron took an early in the clock three as their last shot of the game. It's a tie game, mm-hmm. correct?
Mm-hmm.
Tie game.
Yep.
And I thought he should have held it. He can always, LeBron James can always get a shot. And he's maybe from that spot a 40% three-point shooter. So 4 chances in 10, he's going to make it. I think there's a better shot for him if he waits a little longer in the possession. There's very little chance of calling a foul on that. He was so open. And so it wasn't like there was someone underneath him. Mm-hmm. I thought he should have held on a little bit longer, maybe take a shot with 2 or 3 on the clock. People always say, well, just drive and hope for a foul. I don't think that's a good strategy. The goal is to try to get a good shot. Well, that was a good shot. But I think there's a better shot in a tie game. It's not like you're down 3 and need a 3.
Right.
And so I thought, man, it's not like he's playing the Wolves.
Right.
Where you may not get, with McDaniel, a great shot for him.
Mm-hmm.
You're playing the Nuggets. Like, there's no one that can really keep you from getting almost the same shot you got. Because the idea is to try to reduce the chances Denver gets the shot they want.
Mm-hmm.
And now with it, I think they had a timeout left. Maybe they call a timeout. Yeah. Maybe they don't. If they get a rebound with 5 seconds left, I still think they could have forced a tougher shot by holding it longer. I made a comment, like, it wasn't the worst mistake in the world.
No.
Because I do think getting an open shot is valuable. I do. But against that particular team, you're not playing the Pistons. That team with that guard and that center, I just think going in, you feel like, I got to lessen their chance of getting it back at us. LeBron doesn't make many mental mistakes. And by no means do I think, like, I think this is a debatable mistake. I don't think it's a sure thing. I'd want to talk some data people about it. Yeah. But I found it interesting.
And I think, I know I agree with you, because I think, to your point, had they found a better shot, and even if they missed, it's likely Denver calls a timeout there. But because of when they took it, Denver does not call the timeout. And that's what Henry talks about all the time. In that scenario, not calling timeout is huge, because one, defense is not set, right? You don't get to say, okay, they're probably going to run this play. None of that. It was the random chaos at the end of the game. But for Denver, not random chaos, right? Because they knew exactly what they were going to run at the end in that situation. Coaches run end of game scenarios literally a billion times a day, right? So these players know, oh, yeah, we know what we're going to run. And it was just, you know, great execution, great shot. Wow, outstanding. One thing I want to bring up, David, Michael Porter Jr. has had a good series so far through 2 games. And I'm saying that because, not just because I love MPJ, as everybody knows, it's been a tough time for him. His brother banned from the league for life for the gambling situation. And his other brother,
I keep forgetting it was his brother,
going to jail for the vehicular, was it manslaughter or homicide? There was some accident where somebody got either killed or hurt very badly, where his other brother was the driver. So, you know, that family's pretty close, all the siblings. And I know that's weighing heavily on his mind. I know the team and he said they really wrapped their arms around me and, you know, were able to, like, you know, just get me to have some refuge inside playing basketball.
Without going into a long political discourse about racism in America and how families, not just black families, but poor families, of which largely feed our NBA population, the challenges they have in daily existence, it's just a common thing, unfortunately, where, listen, families are in peril all the time. These are particularly terrible things, right? Mm-hmm. And I have no idea if they're close or not, but siblings normally, not always, but normally mm-hmm. close. I certainly am with mine. He's one of those guys that isn't probably pondering, like, if they were down 0-2, I'm not sure he realizes he doesn't look like the deepest thinker. Not to say he's stupid, I have no idea, but he's kind of like an airhead in the best way. And you know what, man, that's exactly what you want your shooters to be. You really do. You don't want the shooters to get in their feelings when they miss.
Nope.
You want them thinking, oh, this motherfucker's going in for sure. Now I missed three in a row, I'm making the next 12. Yeah, you want that as a shooter. I think he has that. And he might be right. He's a hell of a shooter.
Yeah. Outstanding. Really good. And his defense has gotten miles better from where it was when he first came into the league. So kudos to MPJ for that. All right, folks, we'll be back after a brief commercial break. This episode of True Hoop is brought to you by BetterHelp. Hey, guys, Gerard Hector from True Hoop here. You ever have a situation where a friend, a partner, or spouse does something and you sweep it under the rug like, no big deal? And then something else happens and you don't mention it because you don't want to make waves or ruffle feathers. But what happens is we end up holding on to these things and they become stressors. We all carry around different stressors, big and small. And when we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. I've been open about this in the past, and you guys know I see a personal therapist as well as a couples therapist for my partner and I. And both are helpful for developing positive and coping skills and knowing how and when to set boundaries. Therapy empowers you to be the very best version of yourself. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/TrueHoop today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/TrueHoop. Okay, David. Last night, the Thunder took a 2-0 lead over the New Orleans Pelicans. And one of the concerns that you and I both had was that, look, this team's young. And it's not to say that their being young won't hurt them at some point in this series. But through two games, David, I've kind of liked what I've seen. Chet, Jalen Williams, being at home helps in that environment specifically, where they are so, it's like a college arena. They're just so into those guys and they feel really good. We'll see how it goes on the road in New Orleans. But I've been impressed with just how they look. They're running, they're executing, right? Dignall's calling out his strategy. They're executing it. Their defense last night, swarming. I was like, look at these guys, man. They got like 8 feet arm verticals. They're just everywhere. I was really, really impressed by what I saw from them last night. You know, in that game, Valanciunas has a clear strength advantage over Chet Holmgren, right? Anybody can see that. Probably outweighs him by 100 pounds. And he tried to bully him at every possible turn, which is smart. And he was able to do that a few times. But Chet, David, and you had something you talked about with him. He was undeterred by that. Valanciunas put his shoulder onto him and his chest, tried to knock him down. Then the next play, Chet came back, blocked him straight up one-on-one. I was like, I like this, young man. Like, y'all may lose this series, but you are learning some valuable lessons here. And I was really impressed by what I saw from the Thunder, particularly last night.
Yeah, I caught the I think Valanciunas scored 9 or 11 to start the game.
Mm-hmm.
Was it 11? Yeah. And finished with 19, I think it was. He kind of wore down, I thought. Mm-hmm. The Thunder did a good job not panicking. They are the Miami Heat on the West.
Ooh,
they have their own culture. They really execute great basketball. They understand how to play and how to utilize their players. We said on Monday we thought Giddy would – he needs to be better. And he was much better, mm-hmm. I thought.
Mm-hmm.
Shea's incredible. And I watched his fourth quarter today. I watched all the fourth quarter. Jalen Williams is really good.
So good.
Really
good. He's a second-year player. Does he know, David, he's not supposed to be doing this in the playoffs? He's a second-year player. You're supposed to have setbacks and not be good and whatever.
I mean, Chet's a rookie. Right. You know, he's a 2-year player in the NBA, but only one playing. Yeah, they're really well coached. I heard the announcer say, I did have the audio on for a little bit in the game. where Daigneault was a manager for Jim Calhoun at Connecticut. And they were acting how shocking that is. That isn't so shocking. That's one of the ways you get to be a coach is you go through as a manager and kind of trickle up. He's excellent. They just really play great basketball. They're very athletic. They play fast.
You do.
And I thought the Pelicans made a lot of really bad decisions defensively, in part because of how OKC plays and the weapons they have and the way they move the ball. And just, I don't think it was coaching as much as players just made poor choices. They'll have something to learn from. I don't know what would happen if Zion was playing. I really wish he was, because I do think the Pelicans could be tough against them.
For sure.
And then this first road game will be an interesting test.
Yes. Yeah.
New Orleans, I don't normally think it matters if you have a good start. It would be helpful in this game to get those fans really into it and see how OKC handles that.
I think you're exactly right. All well and good at home when you're in the friendly confines and your own bed and all the faces you know in the crowd as seasons get older. Let's see how it happens on the road. You're down 8 early in the game or 10,
right,
and they're woofing and hollering and making a whole lot of noise. Look, they may be fine. Who knows? But it'll be good to see them respond to it. I thought Brandon Ingram, he's still working his way back, David. So he's still a little rusty in certain instances. He's almost like trying to force it, but then, no, I got stopped last time. Because he's thinking a little bit out there and not playing free and loose, which you normally would if you've been playing all the time and rolling through things. So that's something I think they have to work on as well as a team. And I imagine they will. The Thunder, you talked about them defensively. They force a ton of turnovers. They're just long. Lu Dort is especially just a good player, man. And a guy who, again, we just talked about this, right? Any team could have had this dude. he's one of those players that you just got to coach up. You mentioned Daigneault being a manager at UConn. Think about, and I don't know what you think of Calhoun as a coach, but think about how much he absorbed.
I know all about him. He was
being there with Calhoun, right? Just standing there listening because you're a manager. You get to be at practices and all that. Just soaking in basketball philosophy.
Oh, you're doing everything. Yeah. I don't know what his role was. He could have been cutting up some film. Yeah. That was the first team. It was the team with Donyell Marshall that my Florida Gators beat in the Sweet 16 in 94, spring of 94. In Miami, I was at the game. And I was really close to the Gator coaches, Lon Kruger, a guy named Ron Stewart, who died last year as a scout for the Bucks. And they were very worried about the speed at which Connecticut played. And they said, we're going to have trouble the first 5 minutes. We just have to make sure we're not blowing out the first 5 minutes. And then we'll be fine. But they just fly. And it was breathtaking. To see it on TV is not the same as seeing it in person. And Florida withstood it. It helped to play in Miami. It was Gator home game. Mm-hmm. And we pulled it out in the end in overtime. Donyell Marshall missed 2 free throws to win the game. That was great. They were up, I think, 2, make 2 free throws. You're up 4, and he missed both. That was great. But very impressive program then. Daigneault learned a ton. I'm sure he's coached for a lot of people since as an assistant. Mm-hmm. He just has a real good command of his team.
He does.
And they just play the right way. They play fast and only had 8 turnovers. It's a very good sign.
Yep.
They're better than New Orleans. With Zion, I think it's a much more even matchup.
Right.
The Pelicans don't really have an identity without Zion. You can't play through Valanciunas long. They did it for 4 minutes in the quarter, and that was it really for the game. Moments here and there. And Brandon just isn't back yet. He's just struggling. And they've got some, Jalen Williams is long and athletic. Shea is long and athletic. Obviously, uber athletic. Not a good matchup for Orleans way OKC when they're playing like that.
Yeah.
Because they can't match up with them. They can't score.
No. Definitely not. And Shea was his mastery and control. Always got the ball in his hands. I'm just amazing. Just gets to his spot. I'm like, again, we always talk about players playing at their pace. Jokic, he's another one. I'm like, no, you're not speeding him up. He's going exactly the best at the speed he's going at.
The best guys play at the pit. They get what they want. They want to go fast, they go fast. They want to go slow, they go slow. Nothing matters.
It was phenomenal. So kudos to OKC up 2-0. Another team up 2-0, much to my chagrin. Cleveland Cavaliers, those suckers who tanked their last game of the season to get the Magic, clearly for good reason, because the Magic are so bad on offense. However, David, God, the Magic are playing defense good enough to get to the conference finals. That is conference finals level defense.
They just can't score.
My God, they can't score. They are terrible on offense. Fucking terrible. Terrible.
No, they don't have a point guard. Jalen Suggs isn't a point guard. Powell's not a point guard. So I wrote it yesterday. I don't remember if it made it in or not, because sometimes stuff gets edited. Do you remember how many turnovers he has in two games?
15, I want to say.
15. 8 assists, I think, maybe 6.
Back, folks, for those of you who aren't good at math, that's not good assist to turnover ratio. Real bad.
No, you just can't. Yeah. James Harden has 16 assists and 2 turnovers in 2 games.
That is excellent assist to turnover ratio.
That's quality management. It's just they've got to get a point guard because, Jonathan Isaac is great defensively, and they scramble everywhere. Jamal's, I think, an excellent coach. I'm very
so good. They just need
They need management to get them a legit point guard.
So I love that you mentioned this. I was going to save this for when we get to Phoenix, but we'll talk about it now. Positional instinct is something I want to talk to you about. And I was thinking about this. I was doing a cross-sport analogy, thinking about football, world football. You know, injuries happen, things happen, and you got to shift guys around and put them in different positions because that's just the nature of sports. And let's say in world football, you've got a super talented player who is primarily a midfielder, right? Someone who can advance the ball, press, whatever. But because he's so athletic and so good, you say, you know what? I'm going to play you at left back, right? Which is a defensive position. And you can get away with it in certain matchups because his athleticism and all that works out. But his instincts for the position are not there. So when he's playing against premier attacking people, that player finds himself in trouble because his brain is not oriented to playing that. He's a midfielder. Same thing here, right? You got Paolo, who maybe he will be one day someone who can be a lead, but he's not LeBron James, right? That's not, his brain doesn't operate at that level. So how important is it to have people with, you know, we say positionless basketball, but you need someone who understands what is a good shot? How do I get my teammates into good shots and good offense? How do I organize and manage a game? That's a very specific skill set that, you know, you got to have that in order to be successful.
It's that, but it's also, you know, a point guard that can get by people, whether it's on the dribble and ISO or off the pick and roll, creates advantages because he's drawing 2 to the ball as a helper, and now you're playing 4-on-3. And you got dump offs for dunks, you got lob for dunks, you got kick out for threes. No one's doing that for Paolo. Suggs just is – I like Jalen Suggs just fine, and he got hurt in the game. He's just not there yet. And so that'll help, but I still don't think he'll be the organizing principal at point guard. I think they need to get one more guy to play with Suggs, Franz, Paolo, and then you can pick your choice, Wendell Carter Jr., Isaac. I like those guys. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I like Jamal. I just think they're a player short, and they got to develop their bench.
Yeah, no, it's for sure. It's just that is – so, yeah, folks, we talk about positionless all the time, but that organizer, someone who has that mindset and has those instincts, or as David said, can get by their man and then draw, so valuable. And, you know, you're not going to win if you don't have that kind of person. David, what do you see from the Cavaliers, particularly with what they're doing with their two big men, with Allen and Mobley, that you think is potentially repeatable in the next round, depending, no matter who they play? It's something they can take advantage of.
I've not really done a hard look into it, but when I've watched, I wrote this going to the series, the way they played the Pacers, no pushover, the second or last game of the season, they really bullied Indiana in the paint. And I thought that's what they need to do, and they're doing that. I think Jared's playing really well. Mobley's playing well. That works. Their matchup would be
Boston. Boston Miami winner. So if we assume Boston,
they're the
because they're 4-5.
Yeah, they're 4-5. So yeah, so that's gonna be tough, but possible. Like you gotta outplay people in the paint if you're Cleveland. You can't just depend on Donovan being superhero, which he's not been. And Paolo's not a superhero yet. He just isn't. He's trying to be. 15 turnovers tells you like you're not there yet. He doesn't have the skill set yet. Or the mind even. But yeah, I'm encouraged to see Cleveland just get through the series. It's going to be, I think they play tonight. It's not going to be easy for them at all. Yeah. They could easily be 2-1 and they could lose the series. They've got to continue to build those big guys and let them build a fort defensively, build a wall around the rim against those Magic guys who are slashing, and the Magic live on the free throw line. So they got to avoid that more and then just find ways to score more and to kind of assert themselves. And then hope Darius and you know Donovan keep doing their thing, and maybe Niang and Strew shoot well too, and LeBron.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean they've certainly got a lot of guys who can certainly more guys who can score than Orlando. That's for damn sure. The Knicks are up 2-0 in their series, David, after a wild game was so crazy. I was like, wait, what just happened here? I think I had to rewatch it. I was like, I'm very confused. What happened? It was insane. The Knicks are up 2-0. An improbable game. They got like those last two offensive rebounds to get the shot to DiVincenzo to hit the three. I was like, what? Like, and a big part of that was Joel Embiid's inability to get a rebound, and because
he's
immobile.
He had a race one time back on defense, and he didn't get back in time. He scored. It wasn't his fault, but he pulled up lame. He ended up walking. I'm like, how is this guy keep? What's going on? It's like he's Wolverine. He keeps regenerating something, but it's not full version because he's gimpy as hell. And the Knicks just have it. You know, they have that spirit, man. They're just talk about the way the Heat have that toughness. I mean, New York. That would be an unbelievable battle. New York versus Miami.
A little 75,
74.
like the old school. Like the 90s. Yeah. That's a boulder fight. Not a rock fight. That's a boulder fight.
Yeah. John Starks might get some playing time. Pat Ewing come back. Yeah. Yeah, that was the Knicks just really, I mean, what do they call them? The Nova Knicks?
Yeah.
I love
Nova
that.
Knicks.
I really
They just fight, David. Much like Miami, it could have easily been like, you know, could have given up in that game. And I want to actually talk about this point. So after the game, Joel is crying about foul calls. LeBron did the same thing after the Lakers lost to the Nuggets. And here's my thing about that and referees and foul. And the refs did come out and say, oh, we missed a foul call on Maxey. But
they said David, two.
Two.
They said they missed two.
The Sixers were up love eight that. And had chances to blow the game open and didn't. Like, when you allow the game to remain close, that's on you. So now, if refs get involved, well, what do you want? Like, if you have a chance to put it away, Lakers were up 20. Make refs irrelevant. We're up 25. It doesn't matter what refs do, but they didn't. So I'm not all this crying about the refs cost us this game kind of thing.
No, neither am I. And I don't love the two-minute thing because the other 46 minutes don't matter.
Correct.
Like, it's just silly. The stars get more calls than not, is my opinion anyway. And yeah, you just got to be stronger with the ball in those situations. And bad things happen. And the Knicks had to take advantage. They did. And Philly had their chance to extend the lead. They didn't. This is how it goes. So losers tend to come up with excuses more than winners do. I don't think they're permanent losers, right. But they're losing. They're not handling it the right way, seems to me.
Yes. And look. We can't escape the elephant in the room, which you just mentioned. Joel Embiid is not fully healthy, and this is a problem.
Should not be playing.
I agree.
They'd have been better off sitting him for both games and being down 0-2.
Be down 0-2 anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I realize hindsight's 20/20. Nevertheless, we could have seen this. And I don't know if they go 0-2.
Yeah.
They'd beaten plenty of good teams without Embiid before. I would have liked to see that and then let him be at full strength in game three.
So they have 2 days off. They play tonight. We'll see if that extra day has helped them at all. I don't know if you saw him post game. Really kind of like just head down, like we shouldn't be down 0-2. We're going to tie this thing up at home, you know, all the things. But you can also tell he's in pain, like physically, right? Yeah. Like it's not just emotional pain of losing. This is a man who physically can't move and run. And to your point, they kind of figured some things out when he was out and kind of developed an identity. And so now when they're working him back in, it's tough because you're like, well, this is our MVP, so we have to do. Go through him and Maxey, right? And it's like, oh, maybe you shouldn't. So I think this is Nurse, right? Coaching. You say this is a coach's league. This is where he has to figure out what is the best way for us to optimize you. So it may not be 40-something minutes or whatever the hell it is.
Right.
I don't know. But that's where Nurse has got to come in and do something different, I think.
I'm with you. Yeah, you can't just keep taking a beating. They'll be better. I think they come up with a plan for when Embiid can't go. Mm-hmm. You better get prepared for it.
Because you think it's coming.
These games are coming fast and furious. Yeah.
I think you're right. So home teams had really been dominating and winning most of these games. We finally had a couple road teams win. I talked about Miami to start. The Pacers, excellent win. Not just a win, they took it to the Bucks. Really, really played well. I mean, first of all, it's Pascal Siakam. If we were doing a top five players, which we're not, we're doing top five teams later. Pascal Siakam would surely be in your top five players. He has an argument with Shea and Jokic right now to be in that one spot through two games. You can make that argument. He's been that good.
I haven't looked after what happened last night, but I believe he was number one in scoring and rebounding. So yeah, pretty good. Someone just sent me a text. There's some stat where since the 1960s, he's the first guy to score over 35 points, you know, over 10 rebounds
and
in the first two games of the playoff series, whatever. And the other two guys were Will Chamberlain and Elgin Baylor.
Well, yeah, it's a pretty good list.
Fucking astonishing stat. But I just got a new stat. I think I've seen it before. I just didn't think about it. So here's the players since the merger who have 35 plus points. He had 37. 10 plus rebounds. I think he had 11. 5 plus assists. He had 6. And 65% field goals are better with no turnovers. All right. Guess. Let's just see if you can guess who else may have done that. So 35, 10, 5, 65% from the field, which makes you think big guy.
Yeah, and zero turnovers. Sure.
Yeah.
Jokic?
That would have been my guess. Yeah.
Kareem?
Yeah. Never been done before.
Wow.
Since the merger. It's crazy. Now, I watched tape on that game today. Mm-hmm. Milwaukee needs to reorient their defense to Siakam and not Halliburton. And then if Halliburton can cook like he did in December, then Milwaukee's going to lose the series. but I don't know if he can. He hasn't done it consistently since January's injury. So, yeah, Siakam was amazing. Miles Turner was really good in game
Very
two.
Good.
Very good. TJ finally showed up in the second half. He was my sixth man of the year. And just been terrible until second half. He was very good when they blew him out. Like in a three-minute stretch, game was over. Yep. Maybe it was 5 minutes. They were like up 23 when it was like a two-point game.
Neesmith is much better this game than he was in game one.
Neesmith was better. Nemhard was amazing, 20 points.
Oh, my God.
Hounding Dame everywhere. Yeah, Dame Lillard has 61 first half points.
Yep.
Dame Lillard has 61 first half.
Second half points?
8 second half points in two games, yeah. Yeah. That's where he's wearing down. That's the idea India is playing with. And Draymond Green has talked about this. Have you heard Draymond talk about this?
No, what did he say?
I heard someone else talk about it. He said... The Pacers are built for a regular season with the way they play. And I think in theory, I understand his point because the game does slow down some. Meanwhile, they had an astonishing points per possession transition in game two. And Milwaukee had been a top 10 team since Doc took over in transition defense. Mm-hmm. But even if he's correct in the pace part of it, he's not correct in the fact that that's why they have Siakam now. He's old school. He's a paint scorer. That's also shooting the three very well. It has been since he got to, he's over 40% since he got to Indiana. And he's 40-something, 45, 46, 47 from the corners. Where he hit, I think he was 2 for 2 the other night from the corners. So that's one reason why I think they targeted him is he can play in our transition game. He's the best running big in the league, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But he also is this hard to guard, figure out guy. I mean, his 36-point game in game one was his career playoff high. Before that, it was 32 in game one of the NBA Finals against Draymond.
Yep.
So this guy's been around doing this stuff. And the fact that he went 36 and 37.
Yep.
I was telling someone, that's like the chance of playing 50-plus playoff games and then doing 36-37 in back-to-back games, both career highs, one higher than the other second game. That's like the odds of that, someone can listen to this and tell me I'm wrong. It's very, very small. To play 50-plus games, then go back-to-back career highs.
Right. Yep.
In the 30s, it's just, it's another one of these stats that you just don't see. I think Milwaukee is going to totally change what they do. I think they'll send doubles to him early. There was one crazy play where Dame Lillard's guarding Pascal on the block, so that's a bucket.
Yep.
Aaron Neesmith absentmindedly kind of cuts through and allows Lopez, who's guarding Neesmith, but he doesn't double. He doesn't just kind of scram switch, Lillard, get out of here. He doesn't do anything. He just runs back to Neesmith and leaves Dame on Pascal. They won't make that mistake again. They'll and then a couple of times he caught Pascal got caught screening, sealing Dame inside, and there's no chance for Dame on that situation.
Correct.
Pascal's 6 foot nine and 7'3" wingspan.
Yeah.
Long and slinky and strong. Come on.
No chance. Mark will
be better. I think they'll be better in game three. Doesn't mean they'll win. Indiana shot really badly. I think I said this on our show Monday. Maybe I didn't. I don't remember. Indiana shot, if they had made five more threes in game one, they'd have still been below 33% from three, and they would have tied the game in the first game. They shot terribly, and they did not play with much force. Game two, they shot great. Mm-hmm. They had the best, the best offensive output so far. I think game three will be a battle.
I think you're right. Pascal doing that on the road is huge. Nice tone setter for his team. They're going to go back home now. For these next two games, I'm just loving what I'm seeing from Indiana. And again, Andrew Nembhard winning plays, just grinding on Dame, like just making him work harder and tiring him out for the second half. Because let's be honest, if Dame's not able to, I mean, they did win game one. It's because, again, we talked about Indiana's poor shooting woes. If Dame's not able to be consistent over four, like you need Middleton to do it? And you know, Neesmith's played better, much better defense on
Middleton. He has Middleton also hurt himself and hurt his ankle, and that definitely is an issue. Clearly it's an issue. Yeah, Nembhard, I made this comment to someone yesterday. In watching that game, I mean, there's a lot of pressure in Indiana. They go down 0-2. Knowing Giannis probably comes back at some point in the series.
That's right.
I expect it to be game 4 or 5. I don't think it'll be Friday. Maybe I'm wrong. There's a lot of pressure there. And Nembhard just looked so at home as a second-year player, although he is 24. But then I remembered his junior year at Gonzaga, he went undefeated to the very last game of the season. So when normally you play in Santa Clara in early February, and if you lose, it sucks, but they've already lost 3 games to that point.
Right.
But when you haven't lost the game on February 1st and February 15th and February 19th, every game is do or die. Because you're trying to win the whole thing, yes, but you're trying to win every game now because you have a chance to make history. So they got very used to the pressure. I think him and Suggs both, Suggs wasn't on that team. It was the next year with Chet. That team, it was him and Drew Timme and those guys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he just seems like built for it. You know, he just seems like he's built for it. And I thought the Pacers did a good job making some adjustments to Dame. They still have some more to do. But Dame's making some crazy shots now. And he so is. That isn't necessarily always going to happen. I mean, talking about, like, stop on a dime, bucket threes, because Nembhard's right there. It could be where he struggles, like he has plenty of times this year, and then they're in real trouble if Indiana plays well. But we'll see. Milwaukee's got some championship caliber players on their team.
Sure.
They've done it before, and yeah, we'll see what happens.
You mentioned the Bucks being a little bit better. How can they use their size, because they're very big, to negate the Pacers' speed?
They just kind of slow it down. They got to establish more of a paint presence. They don't really do that very much. It's a very Dame-centric team, which that'll change when Giannis comes back, you know, more than likely.
Mm-hmm.
They need to be more patient, and just they need to get that pace slower. And so Indiana had Nembhard bring the ball up the court more because they were kind of cheating Beverly towards Tyrese early and doubling him more. And they doubled Nembhard more too. And that's why Rick likes having 2 point guards on the court. And Siakam's kind of a third one.
Mm-hmm.
They solve blitzes really well. And so I don't know. I think we'll see more switches by Milwaukee and less blitzes, less double teams, or even hard hedges. But yeah, the secret thing about the game, besides Siakam scoring, is rebounding. 24 rebounds in 2 games, because Indiana's not a great defensive rebounding team. Miles Turner's never been a great defensive rebounder,
right,
although he's doing better. Milwaukee's, and that's where Giannis being out really kills him too.
Yep.
Because he would make a huge difference in the offensive glass.
Yeah, no, 100%. David, the other team that won on the road, the Dallas Mavericks. We said at the beginning of the series, this was going to be probably a long series, 7 games. And that was 90s basketball at the end there. Jason Kidd even said that in the post game. He's like, oh, it was good 90s basketball, like, came. And I was like,
who said that?
Jason Kidd. I'm like, it sure was. Looked like 90s offense down the stretch. Like, just a whole lot of, what are we even doing right now? But Luka made some incredible plays down the stretch because he's fucking Luka and he's so good. Kyrie made some big shots. You know, and I thought the Clippers, Kawhi again, working his way back in. That was his first game back in a while. He's just not there yet, right? So it's just rusty. And
I thought he sucked.
Yeah, force his way back into the game, and it's like, nah, you're not. The team isn't humming and really doing what they're doing because you're trying to force feed your way back in. So you're stunting the collective by doing this, right? And this is a challenge when a guy misses a chunk of the end of the season and you're in the playoffs. Now you're not going to not play him, but it just messes up your flow a little bit. And I thought that, as much as anything, was a big part of the Mavericks' win the other night.
I talked to someone with the Clippers, strongly connected, they were frustrated that everything kind of went through Kawhi late when he just didn't have it. And he looked bad. He just looked, he wasn't terrible, but he looked, for him, he looked bad.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of hijacked the identity of what they were done in game one. That happens. We'll see if he's better in game three. Obviously, it made it easy for Dallas defensively because Kawhi doesn't really cook you too much off the dribble. He shoots over you. Mm-hmm. And that didn't happen. He made a couple of nice plays at the rim, but it was a little too late. They were down, you know, a couple of scores. But Dallas, you know, they didn't play great. Both scores were in the 90s. And
mm-hmm.
I'm not sure what we're going to see from Kawhi in game 3. Dallas has been disappointing to me offensively. I don't know that they played amazing defense because I think Kawhi made it easy.
I was just going to go to that. That was a talking point. Yep.
They get credit. They didn't lay down, but I wasn't blown away with their defense. I was more disappointed in what LA was doing.
Yeah, offensively. Yeah, I thought they were just, to your point, just stagnant and just very Kawhi-centric. Russ off the bench, I thought, in that game, Dave, and we talked about his importance, Russell Westbrook's importance to that team all year. I thought, again, he injects just a level of dynamism for them still at this stage. Athleticism and his ability to put pressure on the rim, like it collapses the defense. I'm like, this guy's still good at this. Maybe it's a place where they do more of that, especially if Kawhi doesn't have it, right? Because I think that would cause Dallas's defense to scramble more as opposed to Kawhi trying to cook in isolation, which you said he's got no burst. Yeah. So where's he going? No one, you're not going to collapse anybody.
Yeah. I mean, Russell still has his, he knows what he's doing. Every time he shoots it, though, I just kind of shake my head.
Well,
it goes in sometimes. Yeah, it goes in sometimes.
It does. It does.
Yeah.
No shooting, Russ. No, we don't want you to do that.
True.
But that's 1-1. All right. The last series, Wolves 2-0 up on the Phoenix Suns.
What series?
This was the Jaden McDaniels game. He was doing his thing. I don't think I've seen Rudy Gobert miss a free throw yet in this postseason. All things coming up roses for the Wolves. And to your point about the last series, I think, yes, the Wolves are playing great defense, but I think the Suns are also allowing them to play great defense by not doing anything with any kind of conviction or force on the offensive end. We talk about it all the time. You know what's easy to guard? People that stand still and play isolation basketball. Very easy. I'm not going to worry about anybody cutting. No, nothing. We're just going to do our, and those, with those long athletic dudes, good luck trying to go get around them one-on-one.
With Rudy behind him. And Cat being 7 feet tall.
Well, here we go now is what we talked about on Monday. Everyone's like, Rudy sucks, Rudy sucks. But look at Rudy's impact now on a team where he's got guys that don't get cooked on the perimeter. Yeah. Now you're seeing.
Yeah. Yeah. Minnesota's been super impressive. We're going to rank our teams here in a minute.
Mm-hmm. Well, we sure are.
So I'm going to save it for that.
And by the way, 2-0, and they had a one dud Anthony Edwards game. So when I say dud, I just mean dud in terms of total scoring, but he was very good defensively and distributing the ball. So if you're Phoenix, you got to be looking at yourselves like, what are we doing? We have a game where Ant scores like, I don't know, 8-9 points and we get blown out.
Yeah.
Not good for us. So Phoenix better figure out some things at home cooking, because I'll tell you what, they get down 10, and let me look at this team, David. They get down 10 early in this game. I could see a 1-2-3 Cancun happening real fast for this team. Because it's looking, they're looking like they're fraying it. They just don't, like, they look like they're already coming apart at the seams. I'm like, guys, what's happening here? Very, very disappointing showing. So we are where we are. All right. Top five, playoff edition. You guys know we do our top five best teams in the league from 5-1. And David, who's on your five line?
I want to start at 1.
Okay, cool.
It's easier for me because I didn't write this down, so I'm just scanning through. So I'm going to go right to what we were just talking about. I had Phoenix win them in the series. They were really rolling down the stretch. Beal was great. Minnesota has done it with a number of people and great defense. And their ownership squabble and all that being aside, they've really just pounded Phoenix, especially in game 2. I think they've been the most impressive team.
Great minds think alike. Wolves are number 1 on my list as well in the top line. And by the way, folks, that ownership thing between A-Rod and that's really crazy, man.
Weird. Like, it's weird.
Taylor, I think he bought like a minority stake, Taylor, the current owner, from another guy. So he has 1% more than it's like some petty background. I'm sure some enterprising journalist is going to really come out with whatever happens in the end. And I can't wait to read what's happening. Very fascinating. But the team's not affected by it. They're winning. All right, number 2, David.
I got to go with the Knicks. I think with Joel Embiid there to be 2-0 is impressive. I don't care how they did it. I don't care how hurt Joel Embiid is. They Philly's probably the best team in that lower seeded area, and New York's up 2-0. So I'm gonna give number 2.
I like it. I went with the Thunder on my 2 line again. Just so impressed by those guys, particularly last night. They were just so, so good. Again, like you said and we said earlier, I want to see how they handle the road, especially if they get down early. How do the young kids react to it? I'm very curious. But so far, I love what I've seen from the Thunder.
I'm going Denver number 3. I think the Lakers also were really rolling going in. And dealing with who you're dealing with there to be up 2-0 is, and looking the way they've looked, to just being poised and having a plan late when they gave up that basket. Yeah, I think and you know, they were dead to rights and they won the game. Yeah, I'm giving them number 3.
Nuggets also my 3 line. Again, Lakers, you were up 20 and then in the third, like, you had a chance to put this game away and you did not. And again, when that team, more than any team in the league, more than Boston or whatever, when this team is down or and they know they need a bucket or they get into good offense, they just know what all 5 guys on the floor know exactly what they're doing. And that's such a huge advantage. Nuggets 3 for me.
Number 4, I'm going with the Mavericks. Big road game. Kawhi comes back. That narrative is a story, but it didn't matter on the court. They did it with defense and just staying with it. And I think that, you know, that was – I wasn't surprised Indiana beat Milwaukee at all. Giannis didn't play. I thought they were the better team. I thought that was a hell of a win for Dallas, and so I give them the 4 spot.
I put the Knicks at the 4 spot, and my only reason for having them so low at 4 is because Jalen Brunson has been extremely inefficient over these 2 games, and the fact that they have a 2-0 lead is amazing, but that makes me slightly concerned. I'm like, if he and they can't find offense a little bit more efficiently somewhere else or in addition to, I think it's going to cause them some problems down the stretch.
All right. Not crazy. Number 5 for me is not the 2-0 Kasey Thunder, because I think New Orleans without Zion and Brandon just coming back is so impressive. You got to go with the Heat. It's an honorary spot to beat the best team in the world on the road like a drum. The Heat get the number 5 spot for me.
Yeah, you know, as usual, I cheated on the 5 line. I was like, oh, I'm not sure. Huh?
Put 2 teams there?
I put 2 teams there, yeah. I put the Cavs and the Heat there on the 5 line. And only because, again, look, the Cavs are playing a team that basically they're like a junior high school team on offense. The Magic. I don't even know. It's just bad. But nevertheless, they're winning they should. Yeah. Got to beat whoever's there. And then, you know, you just mentioned the Heat. Again, we talked about them. Like, what? I don't understand. I mean, I understand, but I don't understand. You know what I mean, David? Like, I'm looking at them and go, and this is why names on backup jerseys don't matter, right? None of that shit matters. I'm like, how are these 5 people beating these 5 people? And it's because executing well, doing it, all the things that matter. That's why it doesn't matter who's better. I got all these all NBA. Yeah, great. This team just out-executed this one. That's why they won the game. And I'm like, listen, Spo, the fact that Spo, I mean, we both agree, right? Best coach in the league. And it's just, he has a handle on everything. It's tactics for sure, which is only a small sliver of what coaching is about. Yeah. His man management and his ability to rally the troops and get those guys to believe in themselves. Yeah. Fucking A, man.
Yeah.
I want to play for Spo. Yeah.
That's what the best coaches, when they're done talking, people are enervated, you know, energized. And yeah, he's great at that. Yeah, let's hope.
Excellent job.
Let's get a steal and win a 1-2 in Miami, and let's get back to Boston 2-2. Oh, man, that'd be fun.
2-2 back to Boston.
And it'd be good for Boston to win a championship, I think, to be pressed. I really do.
I think you're right. Give them some pressure, make them feel it, because they need to. No, I think you're right. All right, folks, enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the games tonight. By Monday's show, we may have some series that are like, right, that are over. Yeah. Looking at you, Phoenix. Orlando, sorry, guys. It's just not happening. It's not happening for you. And Lakers probably too. All right, guys. Enjoy. Take care.